from the National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
Pope Francis visits the United Arab Emirates in a historic trip to the Saudi Arabian Peninsula. What happened in the Muslim country, and what happened on the papal flight back to Rome? Did Pope Francis make news as he usually does? This week on Register Radio, we talk to Catholic news agency's Rome correspondent, Hannah Brockhaus. And then, Register contributor Monsignor Charles Pope weighs in on the scandal swirling around the monstrous abortion bills in New York and Virginia. Hello, I'm Matthew Bunsen, Register senior editor and co-host for Register Radio. My co-host, Jeanette DeMello, editor-in-chief of the National Catholic Register, is away on maternity leave. Well, Pope Francis celebrated Mass for some 180,000 people in the United Arab Emirates. It was a historic visit, filled with symbolic gestures, but also some important speeches. But he also made news, as he usually does, flying back to Rome. I'm joined by Hannah Brockhaus, the Catholic News Agency's Rome correspondent. Welcome, Hannah.
Thank you, Matthew.
Good to be with you. For the Holy Father, a papal trip like this is fraught with peril, with potential upsides, a lot of downsides. Just for a starter, what were your impressions of how the Holy Father did in a rather intense situation?
Well, I was really impressed, in fact, with this trip, but I think that interreligious issues are what Pope Francis really shines on. And these sorts of trips, similarly to the one he made in Egypt in 2017, these are the moments that he shines when he's doing this sort of dialogue with other religious leaders. And that's what really impressed me this time around.
Mm-hmm. Now, for any papal trip going into an Islamic country, any papal sojourn dealing with Islam brings with it the risk of controversy. We had, of course, Pope Benedict XVI's famous Regensburg address in his trip to Germany, as I recall, that sparked a lot of uproar across the Islamic world. This one seemed to go much more smoothly. And is this something that Pope Francis is especially good at, or was this just excellent preparation?
I think it could be a little bit of both. Francis does seem to have some skill with this sort of dialogue. It's something, like I said before, that he likes to do, that he speaks a lot about world peace and about the importance of world religions, which obviously Islam is a major religion, just like the Catholic Church, and their role in fostering peace and not this promotion of a sort of religious fundamentalism. He speaks a lot against that. And so we saw that echoed also in the speeches of the other leaders, of the Muslim leaders on this trip. They also condemned a religious fundamentalism, religious-backed violence.
Mm-hmm. And Pope Francis seemed to have a remarkable relationship with the faithful in the United Arab Emirates. Let's remind everyone that Christians make up about 10% of the population, but almost all of the Christians in the UAE are foreign, a lot of workers, especially from the Philippines. So what kind of a statement was he making to have an open-air mass, first that it was allowed by the government there, by the UAE, but also that it was so intensely attended by the faithful?
Well, that was huge, I think, especially because though Catholics can practice their faith in that country, it's definitely not something that can be practiced so publicly. Ordinarily, you practice your faith there in the churches, in your parish, but it's a much more private thing when you're part of the Christian minority in an Arab country. So for him to have that mass and to have it so well attended, the stadium was full, outside the stadium was full. A good number of Muslims were in attendance as well, mm-hmm. according to estimates, around 4,000. That is a big sign, I think. What a visible sign that is to be celebrating the Eucharist there. The people from all around the world, but who live in Abu Dhabi and in the United Arab Emirates, I think was hopefully something really encouraging and strengthening to that Christian minority there.
And what's the message to the rest of the Islamic world? I know the Holy Father was asked specifically about speaking out on behalf of the persecuted Christians. We're going to get to that in a second. But this message seemed to resonate far beyond just the Saudi Arabian Peninsula.
Absolutely. It does show that the Catholic Church is serious about dialoguing with these other religions, that we're not going to cower in a corner or, you know, kind of act like a minority in those places where we are, but that we are a universal religion, we are a universal church, and we want to show that, and we want to reach out a hand to, in friendship and fraternity, to these other religions, while encouraging them to stand up for religious freedom and these sorts of issues.
Mm-hmm. Now, as any papal flight back to Rome will do under this pope, everyone waits for that in-flight press conference. And I know that the Catholic News Agency and the National Catholic Register both covered it as closely as possible. What was your media takeaway after hearing about it?
Well, the Pope had similar answers to what he often does, but obviously he was very positive about the trip, and he was pretty open, I think, this time. He really made an effort to answer the journalists' questions, including some tough ones. There was a question about the issue of abuse of women religious in the church, often by clerics, priests, or bishops, and he didn't back down from answering that, which I think is really a good sign. So I was happy to see that.
Now, the Vatican itself issued some clarification after the release of the transcript. What was that about?
Well, they wanted to clarify one use of a word the Pope used in the return flight presser, where he used the Italian word for slavery, and he talked about the sexual slavery of women religious in a particular order. He doesn't name the order, but he talks about an order that he said had to be suppressed because of this issue. Mm-hmm. And Alessandro Gisotti, the director of the Holy See Press Office ad interim, he just issued a clarification to say that the Pope meant to use the word, or meant to say, manipulation. So a kind of form of abuse of power, not sexual slavery, which I think can kind of bring up the image of sex trafficking or something of that sort, which would obviously be a very, very serious issue. And so is, abuse of power, of course, as well, but they are quite different. So that was probably a useful clarification.
Yeah. Not the first clarification that's been issued for this pope, but also for several others. So immediate cleanup on the part of the Holy See Press Office, Sala Stampa, and this new communications out is probably a rather welcome thing, isn't it?
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah. So you also have some interesting recent ties, visits to the Islamic world. I'm thinking specifically of a trip that you took to Lebanon. What was that?
I went to Lebanon, specifically to Beirut, over Christmas. And this was my first time to the Middle East, so that was a really interesting experience for me. But it was also just a great opportunity to see what it was like celebrating Christmas, this important feast day, in the Middle East, in a country with many, many Muslims. But Lebanon is a little bit unique compared to some of these countries because the Christians are not such a minority. In fact, they're now a little bit less, but at one point they were about half of the population, and then the other half was Muslim. So they live quite in peace with the Muslims there. But it was also a great experience to see that and how Christmas was celebrated.
Yeah, so I want to talk about Christmas in a second, but very briefly, the situation for the Christians in Lebanon, as you note, almost half the population, they're surrounded on different sides, and even within Lebanon itself, by the risk of radical Islamic groups, as well as being dragged into the conflict in Syria. What is daily life like for the average Lebanese Christian?
I think life there, average day, is fairly peaceful. Like you said, there is always the threat because there are extremist groups in the country and more coming in. A lot of people that I spoke to mentioned the fact that they could definitely see that this radicalization of the Muslims was happening compared to when they were young, perhaps. And so they kind of live with that constant fear as well, those groups. at the same time, now there are many, many refugees flooding into Lebanon, which is well documented. But many of these refugees have also created some issues with the infrastructure, you know, this extra burden on the infrastructure of the country, which wasn't prepared to hold so many extra people. And then the fact that the vast majority of the refugees that have come into Lebanon are Muslim, not Christian, though there are some Christian refugees. So at the same time, I think that a lot of the Lebanese Christians are worried about the dynamic and the political dynamic in the country, since it is so delicately balanced on this balance of Christians and Muslims and the balance of power in their government with that they have right now. And so they are very unique in having that. Like you said, there's the countries surrounding them are majority Muslim countries, a lot of them with, you know, Muslims in power or Islam as the state religion, mm-hmm. which Lebanon does not have. They're unique with their government balancing the powers between the different major religions, but they are really concerned about the risk if the number of Muslims continues to rise in the population.
Right. And then, of course, you have the complexity of Israel right next door, too.
Right. Yeah, Lebanon has a really complex history, for sure.
So what was, in the brief time we have left, I want to hear what your favorite memory was, but in particular from Christmas.
Oh, gosh. It's so hard to choose because there were so many different memories. But I think one highlight for me was we spent one evening with a Chaldean community, so a Chaldean Catholic community made up of refugees from Iraq. They're a small percentage of the refugees in Lebanon, but they're there. And we just celebrated Mass with them. We had some time to speak with them, meet them. And then they threw a little concert ahead of Christmas where the young people from their community sang Christmas songs. And that was just beautiful to hear also because it was music I've never heard before. And that was a really nice moment. Their welcoming was really, really open, and I was appreciative of that.
Yeah, I think in your career as a correspondent, this trip is going to stay with you for a while, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely.
What are you working on right now?
I am following up on some words of the Pope from last Saturday. He had a great pro-life speech. And so I'm looking to interview someone from the group who was there with him, a pro-life leader in Italy, so that I can talk about pro-life issues in Italy, hopefully.
Splendid. Look forward to reading it. Hannah Brockhaus, Rome correspondent for the Catholic News Agency. Thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Matthew. Appreciate it.
When we come back, I talk with Monsignor Charles Pope about Governor Andrew Cuomo, the abortion bill, and his reactions. This is Register Radio.
Don't miss a moment of 2019. Try 6 issues of EWTN's National Catholic Register today for free. Award-winning journalism that goes beyond what you'll find from any secular news service. With the Register, you'll get the real story behind the events that unfold over the course of the year. Try the Register for free today and get it delivered to your home, office, or parish. Want to continue your subscription after your free trial? Just pay $49.95 and you'll get a total of 26 issues filled with spiritual insights on world events, along with compelling Catholic news and information. To get 6 free issues, order online at ncregister.com/NYR or call 800-421-3230 and mention code 919-NYRA. The National Catholic Register. Read faithfully.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
Welcome back to Register Radio. I'm Matthew Bunsen, Register Senior Editor and co-host for Register Radio. My co-host, Jeanette DeMello, Editor-in-Chief of the National Catholic Register, is away on maternity leave. Well, my next guest recently wrote, there comes a time when something is so egregious and boldly sinful that it must be met with strong ecclesial and canonical penalties and remedies. This is a situation, he writes, that is set up in New York, where one of the most permissive and callous state abortion laws was not only passed, but was also greeted with applause by the New York state senators as it passed. I'm reading from a work by Monsignor Charles Pope. Catholic abortion supporters like Cuomo must face penalties, he wrote. Welcome back, Monsignor.
Good to be here.
I had to ask you to guest this week because not only your statement, and it's beautifully written, but also because this is one of the most widely shared of your recent posts. So I think we're pushing about 50,000 shares. So not only did you hit a nerve, but I think there are a lot of people who are agreeing with you.
Yeah, it would seem so. I wish some of the bishops would hear that. I think that at times, well, if it can help some of our bishops to hear that this really grieves us as God's people and God's faithful. And I think if those shares can maybe reflect that, I hope that's reflective of that too.
One of your key points here is that, as you write, something this bad has to be met forcefully by the church. And when we say forcefully, we mean what exactly?
Well, in the article, I don't directly call for excommunication because I'm not enough of a canon lawyer to know. I know that's hard to pull off. But I think whatever the canonical sanctions and penalties that can apply, I certainly think including Canon 915. But I also think that there might be others. And I left that. And, of course, Ed Peters and other canon lawyers did a very fine job of indicating these would be some ways forward.
Yeah. Yeah, and I would encourage everyone, in fact, to go to ncregister.com because we've had some writings by the J.D. Flynn, editor-in-chief of the Catholic News Agency, and also Ed Condon, D.C. editor. Both of them canonists have been weighing in about the question. You referenced Canon 915, which I know relates specifically to the Eucharist.
Yeah, and it's basically that those that are in manifest grave sin or supporting of it and so on should not present themselves for Holy Communion unless they're, first reconciled. And certainly many years ago, Cardinal Ratzinger indicated that this certainly did apply to politicians who, after having been warned, obstinately refuse and continue to promote pro-abortion legislation and so on, things inimical, really inimical to the Christian and Catholic faith.
Yeah, Cardinal Ratzinger, I'm glad that you mentioned his name because he was, as prefect then of the Congregation of the Doctrine of the Faith in the early 2000s, issued a document relating to the role of politicians in the Catholic life of politicians.
Yeah.
How important is it for a Catholic politician to live the faith but also to be informed by the faith in their political decisions? Because that's something that Governor Cuomo of New York, who shepherded this whole process, seems to be denying.
Yeah, well, it goes without saying that it's very, very important, first of all, for their own salvation. One day they're going to answer to God for what they've done, whether good or ill. And then also, it's also important because they are prominent Catholics that they can easily mislead others. They're very influential. And this is all the more reason why I think our bishops need to stay in a very vigorous conversation with them that it doesn't seem, I say, because I don't know what private things take place.
Yes.
But to most of God's faithful, it doesn't seem that this is really treated seriously. And although you compare that to how quickly they swoop down on these kids at Covington with even possible threats of expulsion.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's there's a sense among the faithful that the wolves are protected and the lambs are easily turned upon by the shepherds. And it's a very strange mathematics that in a lot of their thinking. Now, again, we want to say not every bishop. There are good bishops. A number of them have come out and said it. By gosh, and if the bishop in Washington State recently said this, I think also Bishop Scharfenberger in Albany indicated he thinks currently that Canon 915 does apply and that Cuomo should consider himself under that.
Right.
Now, I don't know how official that is, or maybe it's already been said to him privately, but he seemed to affirm that.
And there's the reality too that Governor Cuomo has basically been under that anyway, self-imposed, because of the irregularity of his current marriage.
Yeah.
So an interesting combination of the two, it seems to me, in terms of actually witnessing the Catholic faith in your private life.
Yeah, well, when people go off in one thing, they tend to go off in a lot of things and confusion. I will also say that I can't tell you how deeply disappointed I am with some of the things that Cardinal Dolan said. I leave it to his prudential judgment. He's the Cardinal Archbishop of New York. There may be reasons, but I think he was sort of, at least through his spokesman, dismissive of Catholics, saying, that they're just frustrated and, they just want, them to be punished. And I mean, listen, no, what we want is witness. It's not just for Mr. Cuomo's salvation and warning, but it's for all the faithful, because if we just allow things to go on, it gives the impression, well, I guess the rules don't really matter. And so there's something called the common good that I think he's completely overlooking. And both Paul and Jesus speak of excommunication in the scriptures, and it's always for the common good and for the salvation of that soul. And Paul hopes that this guy will repent, and if you read later on, it seems that he did. This guy, in 1 Corinthians 5, he said, you know, throw him out. Let him, you know, basically hand him over to Satan so that maybe he'll be saved on the day of judgment. And he ordered that community to excommunicate them, this man. And
yeah. We forget, too, that we've had the observation from Cardinal Dolan that the excommunication is not a weapon.
Yeah.
Well, it's not, but it is also medicinal.
It's medicinal. That's a key word, you know, key. And yeah, that's the other thing that irked me. I'm like, I'm not asking for it to be used as a weapon. I don't hate Mr. Cuomo. I love him. I want him to be saved. But I also want medicine for him, but also for so many of God's faithful who think, well, the church isn't really serious about this stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's funny you mentioned Catholic politicians, but also where we are in terms of abortion law, mm-hmm. because immediately after New York passed its bill, we had the proposal put forward in the state of Virginia. Mm-hmm. You're a pastor here in Washington, D.C., mm-hmm. right next door. Certainly ramifications for the whole community mm-hmm. in Virginia, Maryland, and D.C., and that had to do with abortion, similar to the New York law mm-hmm. that will permit the slaughter of innocents, essentially, mm-hmm. up to birth.
Yeah, I mean, horrifying, you know, back and forth between Representative Tran and another representative, and she basically says, yeah, you could. She felt uncomfortable saying it, but she says, yeah, the child could be killed up to the day of birth. And then, but to add to that, the just horrifying then explanation of that by Governor, you know, the Governor of Virginia and Governor Northam. And so I mean, gosh, wow, double whammy, double blow. But here's the other thing. Cuomo not only celebrated lighting the town up pink, but he also said this will be a light to other states.
Yes.
He wants to take this on the road. I just don't know how much more something can be is so egregious that a bishop can't finally say, I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
This we have to impose the maximum canonical penalties on you and completely disassociate you from the church in this.
Yeah. Well, Governor Northam had a rather calamitous radio interview, as mm-hmm. we've noted, and was soon in considerable political trouble. When we're having this conversation, everyone's still waiting to see if he will be able to cling to power as mm-hmm. governor of Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
But the charges of racism,
mm-hmm.
serious, of course,
mm-hmm.
help people, though, to understand what differences there might be mm-hmm. between abortion and racism.
Yeah. Well, at some level, there shouldn't be a lot of difference. But I want to say that I think what I do hear articulated, and there's some truth to it, is that isn't it sad? The outrage that was caused by something that he did, I would hope, largely out of character now for him, many, many years ago, the incredible immediate calls for resignation. That was talk about a trigger event, right?
Mm-hmm.
And yet not to have the same outrage at what he said over what can only be described as clear infanticide. A child's actually born, sitting there on the table. Whatever they mean by making the child comfortable, well, they have a discussion to kill or let the baby live. I mean, I just... why is there outrage about one and not the other? My point is not that there should be more or less outrage, but about both, because both are a terrible attack on human dignity.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm a little reticent to be holding people accountable for things that happened 35, 40 years ago when they were younger. But A, he was in medical school. He's older. B, in 1984, nobody countenanced running around in KKK right. costumes and blackface. I mean, so even at that time, whatever argument you want to make, well, we weren't as enlightened. I mean, we were. In 1984, nobody would have tolerated that, should have. And so I think that this is both of them have this in common. They're a terrible attack on human dignity. And the Klan murdered. They lynched, they killed babies too. They did everything they could. You know what I mean? So I think that they're both equal in one sense, and yet sadly one triggers great outrage instantly. The other is like, well, let me think more about that. Really, what's there to think about? A child being born. But,
and is this an opportunity too to remind people that so much of the abortion movement has its roots in mm-hmm. eugenics.
Yeah.
So there is a kind of partnering between mm-hmm. abortion and racism, certainly yeah. in American history.
Certainly is. And we all know Margaret Sanger's Negro Project. We all, well, I wish we all knew. Maybe mm-hmm. enough of us don't know.
Yeah.
But I think any quick study will just show that she founded Planned Parenthood with the general intention of limiting what she considered inferior populations. And at the top of her list were African Americans. And it was a terrible, racist, eugenist thing.
And the abortion industry today targets minority and communities.
And an astonishing number of African-American children are killed in the womb. Mm-hmm. Astonishing, especially in certain urban centers,
right,
like New York especially, and here in D.C. too. It's less now, but I tell you, it's – I mean, people grieve, as we rightly should, violence and poverty, but the chief cause of death, but nothing's even close for African-Americans, is abortion.
Yeah. In the brief time that we have left, I want to shift gears very – quickly to three keys to credibility at the upcoming sex abuse summit that you've been writing about. And in a funny way, it ties into the whole discussion of how we're reacting to Governor Cuomo. And I wanted to focus on one thing. You talk about, for your three keys, the summit must focus on more than the sexual abuse of minors, which is a point often forgotten. The summit must establish a way forward to establishing greater accountability for bishops. And then the third one, which is something I know you've been talking about for a while, is the summit must speak to the link between homosexuality and the sexual abuse by clergy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a unique thing here with Catholic clergy. I think because we're formed in a same-sex environment in seminaries, and we live in largely same-sex settings, and it's just going to be much more pointed issue when there's a large number of homosexuals being admitted into that system, where it's very unhealthy. It's like an alcoholic working in a bar. And I think so there's a unique situation here that we have to look at and focus on, not out of disrespect for homosexual persons or people with same-sex attraction, but really out of respect for them and for the common good. Again, we get back to this. You know, it's not a good environment for you, but it's also it sets up other people for harm. And somewhere we've got to remember these things.
Yeah. Well, I would encourage everyone to go to ncregister.com. You can read Monsignor Pope's piece on Catholic abortion supporters, like Cuomo, must face penalties, and also three keys to credibility at the upcoming sex abuse summit. Monsignor, always a joy to talk with you, especially be able to talk about these very difficult topics in such a wonderfully pastoral way.
Amen. Thank you.
Well, that does it for Register Radio for this week. Remember, for more news, analysis, and commentary, check out the National Catholic Register online at ncregister.com. Be sure to listen also to our podcasts. Thanks so much for joining me here on Register Radio on EWTN. For Jeanette DeMello and our producer, Jeff Burson, I'm Matthew Bunsen. Until next week, please take care and God bless.